The mission of Marsh Chapel quickens at the connection of voice and vocation and volume. The voice of Marsh Chapel in depth and breadth is epitomized by our first dean, the first dean of Marsh Chapel, Dr. Franklin H. Littell, who died just 2 weeks ago. Our vocation and call to vocation, our vocation to call to vocation, is celebrated whenever a young or once young woman or man finds that place where her greatest passion touches the world's deepest need, as happened explosively with power last Sunday over lunch. Our volume grows, heart by heart, person by person, as the worshiping congregation in Marsh Chapel and the listening congregation around the globe, one by one, are those who experience the joy of discovery, that is, of being discovered, the lost found. Our mission in voice, vocation, and volume, this our central mission, is the common prayer of this sacred hour. First, voice. Our psalm sings of the voice of the Lord rippling through the forests of Zion. You know well the names and voices of our hallowed predecessors in this pulpit. From present moving backward, Robert Cummings Neville, Robert Watts Thornburg, Richard Nesmith, Robert Hamill, Howard Thurman, and the first, Franklin H. Littell. At age 88, 3 years ago, Franklin Littell stood again in this pulpit to preach at the hooding ceremony during commencement of the School of Theology. He's a dear friend and colleague, teacher, and partner of our dear former dean of the school, Dr. Ray L. Hart. In fact, the two most summers spent some time together fly fishing in Montana. You can hear, there's an audio tape of his voice from May of 2006, clear as a bell, robust, age 88. Littell, who was the founder, one of the founders, sometimes called the father of Holocaust studies. More on that in a moment. You know, we at Marsh Chapel and more generally at Boston University do not have the largest material endowment in the country, nor do we have the largest endowment of that sort here in the Back Bay. We are challenged in that regard. For those of you who may feel so moved at some point to help us with that challenge, who might be so moved, for instance, to endow the deanship of Marsh Chapel, be well assured that we will with gratitude respond to your missive, epistle, or call. We will listen carefully and speak briefly. We'd love to help you. But as it stands, no, ours is a relatively modest endowment in one sense. Not so in another. I speak to you of our endowment here, Marsh Chapel, Boston University, of voice. Because in voice, we may just have the greatest, largest endowment, either near or far. Ours is not a visible, but a vocal endowment. Not a financial endowment, but an audible endowment. Not a monetary endowment, but an epistolary endowment. Not an endowment in the coin of the realm, but an endowment in the language of the heart. You noticed coming in the monument sculpture devoted to that great iconic voice of Martin Luther King Jr. And the birds in flight, Karl Barth said, the freedom of the gospel is a bird in flight. But King did not sing alone. His was not only or mainly a solo voice. It was a voice in coro novo with others singing alongside. So King spoke, but so also did Howard Thurman. King spoke, but so also did Alan Knight Chalmers. King spoke, but so also did Dr. Franklin H. Littell. Remember three things about Littell. In the last Sunday of October, I'm going to preach a full sermon about him, remembering Littell for Alumni Weekend. But today, recall simply, if you will, that in the early 1950s, when President Daniel Marsh brought Dr. Littell here, he was of the first, maybe the first, to push to encourage his church — he was a Methodist preacher — and the churches generally to focus on the Holocaust, to know it, to take emotional engagement with it, to learn from it. His were the first courses, formal courses in Holocaust studies across the country, here at Boston University, and speaking from this pulpit. Later at Emory and at Temple and at the University of Chicago as president of Iowa Wesleyan, in countless classrooms and scores of books and articles, he pushed his fellows, men and women, to learn and know and never to forget what had happened in the darkest hours of the 1940s, wrote he, among other things. Gentiles, the churches have yet fully to know and appreciate, still true, what happened in those years. Women and men, children, he said, need to know that there were among the Gentiles and Christians others who were not perpetrators nor passive bystanders as well. Listen for the voice of Franklin Littell, one of the founders of Holocaust studies. Second, he was also one who combined mind and heart. In this setting, we see the interplay of heart and mind. The mind is important, but the heart is the great steed of faith, the great horse on which faith rides. The mind is the bit and bridle alone. And Littell, in his living and preaching and teaching, embodied that combination of learning and vital piety of which Charles Wesley sang in his great Kingswood hymn, "Unite the two so long disjoined, learning and vital piety." And third, Littell was a critical, ardent student of the New Testament, a translator, commentator, and interpreter of the work of Rudolf Bultmann, to the benefit of me and many others of my generation. Here he is, his voice, father of the Holocaust studies, uniter of heart and head, student of the New Testament. This is our mission, our central mission: voice the liberality of the gospel, our common prayer. Second, vocation, that calling to service. Oh, we scour the campus every week when, during the fall and spring terms, our faculty and students and staff and administrators are actually with us. We're hunting every week for those who will be preachers in the next generation. "Is it you?" we say, subtly or not so subtly. "Who will come along?" As Isaiah says, "Whom shall I send? Send me." We're looking for those who will speak. But you know, the future will open. The peace of God will come upon us in our time, not only or maybe even not mainly through those who are entering the ordained ministry. It will come through those who are connected not only to a theological reformation, but also and more so to a cultural transformation, who are in fact called to ministry. "Is it you?" But in a more secular sense. A powerful expression, an explosive moment of that occurred last Sunday. Not by the way, in worship. I think we did our good job of ministry of word last Sunday, and in the liturgy and homily and music, we offered service to God and neighbor. But the explosion happened at lunch. Covertly and carefully, our lay leadership, the combined talents of many in this room, prepared a surprise luncheon for three young women. They, through the week in emailing and phoning, prepared a smorgasbord. If ever there was a more savory or more calorific meal served in a church basement, I know not when and where that would have been. We needn't have eaten anything again until Tuesday night. They prepared the meal with, yes, a beautiful cake at the end. I saw some of you putting out paper and blowing up balloons. And after lunch, there was a moment. This was a moment, I'm going to use the word, of ordination. No, it wasn't a moment of kneeling, and it wasn't a moment of hands laid on heads, nor of stoles donned or robes given. But it was a moment of charismatic transfer when three young women were honored and spoke about their calling to service. There were speeches made. There were prayers offered. We sang together a couple of times. The room was full of humor, and then there was a quiet. And gifts were given. Now, I pause here to mention the detail of excellence in the gifts, not only in their selection, but especially in their presentation, in the wrapping, in the bows. There are three things that grow a church: excellence, enjoyment, and entrepreneurial spirit. Excellence in anything, from mowing the lawn to preaching the sermon to administering the sacrament to giving the gifts. Enjoyment of people. We need one another. And an entrepreneurial wind blowing through, and all three were present over lunch last week. Then there was a pause, and each one was asked to speak about their future. One is going into urban teaching back home in Missouri. One is going to continue to foment the hospitality of a certain congregation not very far from here, actually Marsh Chapel itself. And one is going to serve the Lord with gladness in the transformation of culture, working for the common good, practicing law after passing the bar here in Boston and Suffolk County. A teacher, a community organizer, and a lawyer. And there was, in the speaking and hearing, a charismatic transfer, an announcement and acknowledgement of charismata, and it was powerful. It was palpable. It was the kind of moment, and I repeat it here for this reason, which cried out and cries out today, et toi? And you? Here is their service. And yours? Vocation. The liberality of the gospel put to work is central to our mission, our common prayer. Where your greatest passion meets the world's deepest need, there you find an experience of really being alive, a calling and vocation, and a way to live into the unforeseen future. Third volume, central to our mission here at Marsh Chapel, is the ongoing expanse of the embrace of Christ, the ongoing expanse of a circle of fellowship. And we mean that very specifically by those who are listening and those who are present, naming as an experience of being found. For some reason here, in this setting, and before this table, you have come and you are present. This is a church family to love and a church home to enjoy. This is the ongoing growth, the joy of the angels in heaven when one who is lost is found. And at table here in Bread and Cup, in just a moment, with Reverend Victoria's celebration of the Eucharist, we will be fed and so found. It is an unspeakable joy when the lost is found, when a lost sheep is found, when a lost coin is found, or when 29 years ago, Jan and I were serving a little church in the neighborhood of Cornell University. We had two children under the age of two, a modest home, a more modest salary, challenging work, a steep learning curve. And as you discover early in the ministry, it's always Saturday night, a sermon to prepare. We had the challenges of that stretch of young adulthood. One Saturday morning after a light breakfast, Jan went to do the shopping. The children were sleeping. They were sleeping because they were up at night, most of the night, every night, particularly Saturday nights. So they needed to catch some sleep in the morning. She went to buy the groceries, and as she came back and unloaded the bags, she burst into tears saying, "It's gone." I said, "What?" She said, "My engagement ring. I've lost my ring." Once the children awoke, we packed them in the car and drove back to the grocery store, and we hunted up and down each aisle and hunted up and down each side aisle and looked behind boxes of Cheerios and Wheaties and underneath grapefruit and melons all through the afternoon, employing the help of managers and attendants to no avail as the sun began to set. We returned to our modest home and challenging work. What a sad evening. No ring, no joy, no sermon. The children finally went to bed in preparation for the long night to come. Jan had her dinner and went to bed, and there I sat late in the evening with no wind to fill the sails and a sermon coming. It's always Saturday night. So I resorted for cure to the one lasting cure of writer's block, if there is any. The writers in the room will know it. Sometimes it works, and that is eating. Down I went to the kitchen. There, took some juice and had to make a choice between a cookie and some toast. Finally decided on the comfort of toast and reached. There were only one or two pieces of bread left in the loaf, and I reached down into that long plastic bag and dug around and pulled out a piece and then another. And then, what was that? Something round and something small and something like a sermon point, diamond-like, that pointed, that sharp, and that valuable. There it was. And the lost sheep and the lost coin and had a partner in the lost ring now found. Is there anything like the joy of the lost being found? In the moments of sacrament, those who are lost in their lacking their own best past have the joy of being discovered by your own best past. Those who are lost in a sea of self-concern have the joy of being found in the thanksgiving of the Eucharist. The word Eucharist means thanksgiving. Those who have a sense of absence have the joy of being found by a sense of presence, remembrance and thanksgiving, and presence. Truly, I tell you, there is more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who need no repentance. Voice, vocation, and volume. The voice of Franklin Littell, father of Holocaust studies, uniter of heart and head, student of the New Testament. Vocation, three young women, a teacher, a community organizer, a lawyer. Volume, the lost being found in presence and remembrance and thanksgiving. Amen.